This is the second lesson in a series I'm going to do on apologetics. I'm going to review only three things, maybe four, very briefly. And today we're going to talk about where do we get faith and how do we know what's truth. And the premise here is it does take some faith to be a Christian, but it would take far more faith to be an atheist than it does to be a Christian. It's a greater leap into the unknown to say, I don't believe there's a God. You can't prove a negative anyway, logically, but there are people who take that position. You really only have three worldviews that are possible to you. I don't know where else you would go with this, but theist, theo, Latin, you get God out of that. You have Judaism, you have Christianity, and you have Islam that all say there was a creator and he created what we see. He lives outside the universe and created the universe. The best way to understand a theist is to say there is a beautiful painting here and there was a painter who did it. The pantheist, which is Hindus, Hindus, if you wanted to make another god in Hinduism, you probably could make a good case for it. They, being in India recently, they mentioned that there were 32,000 recognized gods. Hindus are pantheists. Some Buddhism is pantheist, and most New Age is pantheist. Pantheists believe that God is in everything. God is in you. My Hindu guide in India said, we don't have to go to temple. And I said, really? He said, no, God's in us. And so why would you go to see where God is when he lives in us? And said, of course, he's in the trees and the water and the sky. And so we don't go to temple. So pluralists see God in absolutely everything. That's a nice God in everything. Sounds nicely, but then God is sort of nothing as well. If we stayed with our painting analogy, pluralists say God is the painting. He didn't paint it, but God is the painting. The atheist, that would be humanist today in the world. There have been other realms of atheism. Atheists say there is no God. They say we recognize there's a painting, the universe, but it's always existed and it always will exist, made famous by Carl Sagan saying, as you looked out at the universe behind him on a screen, this is all that has ever been and all that ever will be. And I guess we can include the fourth group there, which are agnostics. Agnostics say we don't know. They have no clue. They see the painting. Do you think somebody painted it? We don't know. Do you think there's a God? Not sure. Just don't know. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist is a key to this lesson today. The less evidence you have for something, the more faith it requires to believe it. I think that's a logical part of thinking and reasonable thought. And so faith fills in the gap of knowledge that you have. If you don't know much, it takes more faith to believe it, logically. But the gap here for atheists is huge. Number one, there's overwhelming scientific evidence that the universe exploded out of nothing. Scientists are agreeing that the Big Bang theory happened. There's very little resistance to that today. And that's a new discovery. If you put dots with an ink pen on a balloon and then started blowing it up, every dot would move away from everything else. And that's how the universe is today. Everything is moving away from everything else. There are at least 300 billion stars. They're now estimating in some new discoveries with the Hubble telescope that there are probably three stars like our sun for every grain of sand on Earth. That won't get you very far. You just get a headache thinking about that. But there's overwhelming scientific evidence that the universe exploded out of nothing. Here are two possible choices. someone created something out of nothing, or nobody created something out of nothing. That makes no sense to me that you could get there. What's reasonable here? Atheism requires more faith. There's a bigger knowledge gap with atheism there. And that's the only two views you can have today. I was reading something this week in researching this a little bit, that the simplest of life forms on Earth has an information equivalent of 1,000 encyclopedias. Now what a theist, a Christian worldview would say, is it takes intelligent design to create intelligence. But what the atheist view would say is completely different. It says non-intelligent natural forces created intelligent life. Yeah, that's a gap here. You know, that's a stretch for me. If it just happened, if a ballpoint pen and a field just came together, that would be amazing to us. But we're talking about our bodies and the earth and the balance there is in the universe, and it makes no sense. The Bible is full of prophecies that were written hundreds of years before specific things happened and fulfilled. Christians believe that God, outside the universe, saw these things, created these things, controlled these things, and he's the God of history. He's the God of the future. He knows where we're going. Everything has a purpose and a plan. And atheists have a lot more explaining to do about how you could write a prophecy hundreds of years before. One of those illustrations from an old Moody Science film is they explored seven prophecies about natural things, what cities would be destroyed, what would happen in political events. They looked at seven things, and they concluded an average of 720 years written beforehand. They concluded that the possibility, the probability of those seven things happening, as were predicted, was 1 in 7 quintillion. And to explain that, they said, fill the state of Texas 3 feet deep with silver dollars, mark one of them with a red pencil, blindfold a guy, and give him 1 hour to pick up the right one the first time. So it just, explain that if you're an atheist and you say, I don't believe. So every worldview requires some faith. Even to say, there is no God, there's no evidence that would lead you to that conclusion other than you choosing to believe that. But here's the problem. If you believe that one worldview is correct, then of necessity, it excludes other worldviews. You can't say, well, I just believe we're all going to the same place and we're all trying and yeah, I'm just tolerant of everything. Religious freedom doesn't mean freedom from religion. It means freedom to choose, but we've made religious freedom the freedom to tolerate absolutely everything. And I want to be loving and kind, but if somebody is wrong and it has eternal consequences, I think we have some obligation to talk to them about that. If the Bible is true, then any system of thought that says the Bible is untrue is false. You can't have both. People want to say, well, Jesus was just a good teacher. If he wasn't who he said he was, then he filled us with false hope and he told tremendous lies and he was a horrible person. You can't say he was just a nice guy. He was a liar or he was who he said he was. Only two possibilities. The reason that most people don't believe in Christianity is a choice. And evidence is not, there's going to be enough evidence to lead you to a logical conclusion. Okay, a reasonable conclusion. But there's not going to be enough evidence to force you to believe anything. And so people can choose to believe. I believe that most unbelievers don't want to believe because it would change the way they live. If there is a God and if he created, then you have to recognize that you have someone who can tell you how to live and that there are eternal consequences to the way you live life on earth. And we'd rather not have that obstruction. We'd rather not have to be obligated to God. If our preference is to believe, then we want Christ to be true. I've chosen to believe in Christianity. As I was walking away from my son's grave now 19 years ago, I was aware that I wanted to believe. I would have almost chosen to believe at that time. Wouldn't you like to see him again? Yes. And so I'm acknowledging that I have cultural, social, family pressures, psychological pressures on me to choose a belief system that I like. And so I'm not saying I'm a Christian because I have to be a Christian. I'm saying I chose to believe based on the evidence that's presented and based on my personal preferences. I'd rather be a Christian than not be a Christian. So choosing to believe means changing who you are and who's in charge of your life and how you live your life. And I think a lot of people just don't want that to be the case. Jesus said, if any man would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And so to be a Christian, subscribing to a theistic worldview where there's a creator who created and we owe him an obligation, is to obey him. Adam experienced that in the garden and chose not to obey. Most rejection of Christianity is not intellectual. In talking to a lady who claimed to be an atheist not long ago, she wanted me to prove to her that Christianity was right. And I said, I actually took a whole course on this years ago in college. And I can start with Descartes' ontological argument for the existence of God and go through a bunch of proofs. But none of them will convince you if you don't want to believe. And she wanted me to prove more. I'm saying, no, you either choose or don't choose, but I'm not going to get into an intellectual argument with you. You can't, there's no sense in me talking to you about the fact that there is no God because you can't prove a negative. You can't say what is not because nobody knows what is not. You can say, I believe God doesn't exist, but that's the end of that argument for that case. I said, I believe God exists, but I choose that. And you're choosing not to believe, and it requires more faith to believe what you believe than what I believe. And so getting in an intellectual argument with somebody about whether or not Christianity exists may not change their mind. Our beginning text on this was 2 Peter 3:15. Be quick to give an answer for the faith that you have. And I think you need to be able to do that. But God wants us to choose to love him. And he's left enough ambiguity in life that you don't have to. Nobody is forced to believe. Let me tell you, there's going to come a time when the trumpets will sound and the eastern sky will roll up and folks will call for the rocks to fall on them and Jesus is going to return. And it says every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord. He can get that today if he wants to. If he just appeared. I was doing a wedding in here, and one of those sentences that I use in weddings, sometimes, not always, I said, just as Jesus chose a wedding in Cana to make his presence known at the site of his first miracle, I'm sure he's pleased to be here today and add his blessings to what the two of you are doing. At that moment, lightning struck a tree right here in the woods. This building shook, and I said, and he's here. You know, if I'd have been making an altar call at that moment, I could have gotten everybody to come up if I believe that, you know. And or the next one's for you, you know, that's how we do that. But God could persuade you to be a believer. He can bring you right on in by showing you his power. And he's done that in subtle ways, but it's ambiguous enough that you're not forced to believe, because forcing people to believe is of no value at all. My favorite illustration of that is there was a girl in my home church that was a year older than me. Her name was Imogene, and I don't guess we're naming girls that as much anymore. I asked her to go out on a date with me 10 or 15 times, and she said, without hesitation or ambiguity, no. She obviously was not interested in going with me. And then one night at a church function, she sidled up to me and took my arm and smiled and said, what are you doing after church tonight? And I said, well, let's go out. And we went out three or four times, and she just was as nice as she could be. And I was real pleased with this until a friend of mine found out that she really wanted to date Billy, another guy that if there had been drugs to sell, Billy would have been selling them. We didn't have drugs back then, but he was kind of a known reprobate, I guess is the way to describe Billy. So her mother made a deal with her for every date she had with Billy, she'd have to have one with me. That's bad on your ego, I'll tell you. I didn't ask her again. It wasn't worth it. I don't know how she and Billy finally turned out. But there's no joy in that at all. We don't want a forced deal. You have to, you know, say you love me holding a gun to your head. I'll say anything you want me to at that point without denying Jesus. And so God could have set it up where you're forced into belief. But your free will and the protection of that is incredibly important because love requires a choice. And he's left himself removed enough from your life that you can look and decide to believe in him and love him. God so loved the world that he gave. You can believe that or you don't have to. But I'm just suggesting that it will require more faith to not believe than to believe. God wants us to choose him, to know him, and to love him. And he created us free and high enough to reject him if we want to. But there's enough evidence to believe and enough ambiguity to not force you to believe, I guess is the way to say that. As a Christian, I have a sense of purpose. I think I understand the universe. I think I've got the box top. Gene will work puzzles at home. I occasionally will get into that, but life is complicated enough without me complicating it with a 1,000-piece puzzle. And one of the things I was trying to explain to one of the grandchildren not long ago, they dumped this puzzle out on the floor, and it was probably 30 pieces. And they were just trying to force pieces together, the 5-year-old. And I said, Dalton, look at the box top. And he said, why? And I said, it'll show you what the picture is going to look like when you get through with it. That was a brand new thought to him. He just was going to force things in. And he was saying, does this go? I said, no. It doesn't fit. Look at the box top. I think as Christians, we get to look at the box top and life can make sense to us. I think if I were an atheist and I didn't think anything had meaning and I thought this was it, life wouldn't make sense. I took a leave of absence from the church I was pastoring when, after 20 years there and thinking about doing it anyway, a fella called me at 11 o'clock at night at Christmas and wanted counseling. And he said, I'm not a Christian, so I don't want Christian counseling, but I got to see somebody. And you were the only one available tonight. And I said, I don't want you to talk to me as a Christian, but as a counselor. He said, my wife's pregnant. My girlfriend is pregnant. I've embezzled about $5,000 from my company, and the auditor's coming in the morning, and I'll be arrested. And I said, let me understand this. You don't believe there's anything after this life. You think we're just here, and then we go away to nothing. He said, right, I don't believe in God. And I said, well, you're in a mess. If I were you, I'd drive that red truck down to the Gay Street Bridge, leave a note to anybody you care about, and jump. And at that point, I realized I maybe needed a break from counseling and pastoring. And I read the paper the next morning with interest because I was really afraid that he might have done it. He left not getting the counsel that he needed. But that's how I really feel deep down inside. If this is all, and you've just messed it up so badly. But as Christians, we know that we can find meaning and understanding. We're here in rain and training. We're lowing and growing. We're growing and knowing to become something that we're not yet, so we can rule and reign with Christ. And so I have a sense of purpose. I feel like I have a destiny. I know why I'm here. Unbelievers are not sure why they're here. They don't know where they're going. They don't think they're going anywhere. And I don't think they have nearly as much peace about life as we do. And there's a lot of scientific evidence to prove that. Christians have an enthusiasm for life. We're looking forward to Jesus coming back, if nothing else. Hopeful about the future. The Lord is coming. Maranatha, come quickly, Lord Jesus. Let's deal with one other side of this in closing. Are all religions true? True story that happened not long ago. A seminary student came back to his hometown from seminary at Christmas. And he decided to visit it, to visit a church that he didn't normally go to just for the experience. And everything was okay until the pastor said, our sermon today is entitled, All Religious Beliefs Are True. And he preached for 30 minutes on the thought that if you have a religious idea or belief, it's true that God's inclusive, that there are many ways to approach God, and that whatever you believe religiously is true. And the boy just kind of hung his head and made a note or two, but was disappointed in the sermon to say the least, hoping that he could just sneak back out. But during the dismissal prayer, the pastor had walked to the back of the church and was shaking hands with people. And he shook the boy's hand and said, are you new here? And he said, yes, I am. He said, well, did you enjoy the service? And he said, no, sir, I didn't. And he said, what didn't you like about it? He said, well, I disagreed with the premise of your sermon, sir. And he said he didn't want to get into it, but the guy just kind of pushed. And he finally said, the pastor said again, I believe any religious belief you have is truth. And why don't you believe that? And the boy leaned forward and very quietly said, sir, my religious belief is that you're going to hell. And the pastor said, well, I guess all religious beliefs are not true. He was willing to defend himself. And the fellow went on. And he said, I hated to do that, but that was the quickest way to say all religious beliefs are not true. The agnostics who don't know and the atheists say there is no God and say that can't be known, but they claim their view is true. And a part of what I said last week is atheists are getting aggressive. They don't just cease to tolerate Christianity. They aggressively want it out of the culture. They don't want us to just not make them celebrate Christmas. They want to say Christmas is evil. And there's a whole other level of agnostic atheist aggression in the world today. And it's because they believe that their truth, their claim is absolutely right and everything else is wrong. They say truth can't be known in that sense. I believe it can be. A lot of religious beliefs are contradictory. They teach opposites, so not all religious beliefs are true. Christians say how you live has consequences and there's heaven and hell after this life. And Hindus say, no, that's not true. Depending on your works, there's an endless cycle of reincarnation. You're going to come back. You're eternal. But if you're really, really good in this life, eventually after hundreds of reincarnations, you could come back as a cow. I choose not to believe that. That's not attractive to me. I certainly don't want to come back as a cockroach. Or whatever else they can think of there. They're just contradictory. A primary distinction, Christians believe in salvation by grace and faith. And the rest of the world, if there's a religious belief, believes in salvation by works, if you're saved at all. In America, tolerance is in. Put up with everything. Don't criticize anybody. And so religious pluralism, all religions are true, is really where a lot of people are today. But religious freedom doesn't mean we endorse all religions. I stood at the brink of a deep pit at Chichen Itza in Mexico, the Mayan Indians ruins, and the guide told us about how many young women were thrown into that pit. They've been down in there and looked at bones, and there's hundreds, if not thousands, of bones of young females in that pit that every time it didn't rain or it rained too much or something happened that they didn't like, they found a young virgin in their religious culture and they threw her in. I'm not going to feel good about them coming getting my daughter or granddaughter and saying, our God is requiring a sacrifice today and she's it. I would choose not to believe that at all. And so I just don't agree with killing somebody else because of your religious views. One of the illustrations that's used to justify that position is the six blind men touching an elephant. I won't go into detail, but one's got the tail and says the elephant's a rope. And one's got his leg and says it's a tree trunk. And one's got his side and says he's a wall. And say, see, they all have their different perspective. But somebody was using that as an illustration one time. And I said, but they're blind guys and they don't have a clue. And so why should I tolerate the view of a blind guy holding the tail of an elephant? He doesn't see the elephant. He doesn't have the box top. This tolerance drives me bonkers. Yes, you've got a perspective, but if you're wrong and it's contradictory to anything else, we have to choose what's right or wrong. There are eternal consequences to untrue religions, and we need to lovingly tell other people the truth. The first missionaries that I supported, the church I pastored in Knoxville, were going to Irian Jaya, Indonesia, to a language group of 4,000 people that had not seen a white person. They were one generation removed from being cannibals. They had been headhunters. And when they got there, they watched in horror just in the first few weeks that they were there when a woman got sick, and they decided she was going to die, and they just went ahead and buried her alive. With them being unable to stop them, even with pleadings, they eventually converted that entire 80% of that language group is now Christian. They have the New Testament and almost through with the Old Testament. And they don't bury sick people alive, and they don't cannibalize their enemies in neighboring tribes. We need to go tell people you're wrong about what you're doing. And I think that's an appropriate thing to do. Believing the truth is important, and it has consequences. And so what I'm going to ask you to do in the weeks ahead with this is look at the most rational approach. Look at what is there evidence for. It's not going to force you to believe. You're not going to be overwhelmed by it. And I don't want you to just believe because your parents or your culture, your society or your friends believe. But believe because we have some evidence that points us in that direction and we reach a reasonable conclusion. And contradictory claims are going to have to be refuted. They can't both be true at the same time. Either there's a God or there's not. And opposites are going to have to be either true or false. So I believe there is a beautiful painting that is the universe, and I think there's a painter. And we can know him, and that's what's really exciting. So we'll continue in this vein. I'm trying to get this where we can tape it, and I'll put it on the web as a podcast. If we can get technologically advanced enough to do that. Kevin was here working on it today. We think we can do that. All right, we're going to receive communion this morning. Communion is a great...